Is déjà vu more than just a quirk of the human brain? Is there always a rational explanation for the paranormal? If you've asked yourself these questions before, then you need to delve into the mysteries of the Unknown 9 universe. Unknown 9 Awakening is a new action-adventure video game. You play as Haruna, an audacious heroine with the ability to navigate a mysterious dimension that overlaps with our own. But her quest for hidden knowledge does not go unnoticed. She soon becomes the target of a secret society that wants to use her power to twist the course of human history. Their confrontation takes them across the world, from the sands of Mauritania and perilous jungles of India to the gothic landscapes of Portugal. Dive into a mysterious parallel dimension. Unknown 9 Awakening releases October 18th, 2024 for PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the Unknown 9 universe at unknown9.com/spoon. That's unknown9.com/spoon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up next week is the Oscars of Science, the Nobel Prizes. So I want to share one of my favorite Nobel Prize stories ever. It involves the scientist George Hevesy. Hevesy was a bald man with droopy cheeks and a trim mustache. He was born to an aristocratic Jewish family in Hungary in 1885. He did work that straddled both chemistry and physics. And as we'll see, straddling that line ended up hurting his career. Hevesy's not very well known today, but I think that's a shame. He should be, both for the incredible work he did and for pulling off some of the greatest stunts in science history. One in particular involved international smuggling, some dastardly Nazis, and a disappearing Nobel Prize. All that and more coming up next. From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, science-y history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. In 1910, young George Hevesy arrived in Manchester, England, to study the hottest field in science, radioactivity. His lab director, Ernest Rutherford, immediately assigned Hevesy a task involving a block of lead. The lead was slightly radioactive. The source of that radioactivity was an unknown substance inside the lead. Rutherford called the substance radium D. Rutherford wanted Hevesy to separate out all the radium D so that they could study it. The job was analogous to asking someone to take a beaker of ocean water and separate all the salt out. Except separating the radium D would be much harder. But Hevesy was a gifted chemist, and Rutherford thought he could handle this Herculean task. Actually, though, the task turned out to be not Herculean, but impossible. You see, radium D was not actually a separate substance. It was just a slightly heavier form of lead, a so-called isotope. And as we now know, it is impossible to separate two isotopes of a substance using only chemistry. It just won't work. But Hevesy didn't know that. No one knew what an isotope was then. So Hevesy wasted 2 full years tediously trying to tease the lead and radium D apart, all to no avail. Talk about frustrating. Outside the lab, Hevesy was also facing domestic frustrations. He was far from home, and he missed savory Hungarian food. The bland English cooking at his boarding house just was not cutting it. You can imagine the overcooked beef, the soggy peas, the bland mashed potatoes. Yuck! Hevesy also noticed patterns in the meals that his landlady served. He was supposed to get fresh meat every day, but steak on Monday was always followed by, say, beef stew on Tuesday. He quickly grew suspicious that his landlady was recycling ingredients. Her fresh daily meat was anything but. Heavishy confronted her about this. She denied it. So Heavishy decided to seek proof. Now, miraculously, he had achieved a breakthrough in lab around this time. He still could not separate the radium-D from the lead, but he realized that maybe he could flip that problem to his advantage. He had been musing the possibility of injecting minute quantities of dissolved lead into a living creature. He hypothesized that the creature would metabolize the lead, which would move throughout its body. And here was the cool part. The radioactive portion of the lead, the radium-D, would emit little beacons of radioactivity as it moved throughout the body. And by tracking these beacons, Heavishy could actually see the outlines of veins and organs in the body. He could practically see inside them, which would be unprecedented. At the time, doctors had just started working with X-rays, a big breakthrough. But X-rays only illuminate bones. You can't see the heart or the lungs or kidneys. Well, Heavishy's radioactive tracers offered a way to do that, to see inside veins and organs. It could revolutionize medicine. But before he tried using radioactive lead on the tissue of a living being, Heavishy decided to test this idea on the tissue of a non-living being, a test with an ulterior motive. One night at dinner, Heavishy took too much meat, and when his landlady's back was turned, he sprinkled hot, powdered radioactive lead all over it. His landlady gathered the leftovers like normal and whisked them into the kitchen, supposedly to throw away. The following day, Heavishy brought home a newfangled radiation detector from his lab buddy, Hans Geiger. That night at dinner, he asked his landlady, "Is the meat fresh?" She assured him, "Yes, yes, very fresh." And he said, "Really? Let's see." Sure enough, when Heavishy waved the detector over that night's meal, the Geiger counter went furious. Heavishy confronted his landlady with the evidence. But as a scientific romantic, Heavishy laid it on a little thick, explaining the mysteries of radioactivity. In fact, his landlady was so charmed to be caught so cleverly, so scientifically, that she didn't even get mad. There's no historical record of whether she altered her menu, however. Not long after this stunt, Heavishy's career went a different direction. He paused the work on looking inside veins and organs with radioactive tracers. Instead, he got involved with hunting for new elements on the periodic table, work that straddled chemistry and physics. To pursue this work, Heavishy left England for Copenhagen in 1920. There, he studied quantum mechanics with the Danish physicist Niels Bohr. Now, in 1922, the box for element 72 on the periodic table was blank. Scientists knew that an element had to go there, but no one had discovered it yet. And discovering it would be a big deal, possibly worthy of a Nobel Prize. But there was controversy about what the properties of this element should be and where to find it in nature. Picture a periodic table. It looks kind of like a castle with turrets, but there's this weird landing strip on the bottom. The top row of that landing strip contains the so-called rare earth elements. For various reasons, rare earth elements stick together in nature. If you find a mineral deposit with one of those elements, you're likely to find the rest as well. They stick together. The rare earth elements run from number 57 to 71. Back in the early 1900s, many chemists believed that element 72 would also be a rare earth. And because rare earth elements stick together, they tried looking for element 72 in rare earth ores. A French chemist named Georges Urbain even claimed to have discovered it. But some scientists did not buy Urbain's work. One of them was Niels Bohr. Bohr sat down in his office one day and started using quantum mechanics to run some calculations on element 72. In particular, he wanted to know what its hypothetical properties would be. And Bohr realized that, according to his calculations, element 72 would not behave like a rare earth element. That was a big clue. If element 72 did not behave like a rare earth element, it did not belong on the landing strip at the bottom of the periodic table. Instead, Element 72 would be a brick in the table's main body, up in the castle part. And if Element 72 did belong in the main body, its box would sit below Element 40, zirconium. Now, on the periodic table, elements that sit above and below each other have similar properties. They also mix together in nature. So Bohr told Hevesi and another scientist to test some samples of zirconium to try to find element 72. And right away, they did, on their first attempt. It was probably the least sweat discovery of an element in periodic table history. We now call element 72 hafnium, after the Latin name for its place of discovery, Copenhagen. This discovery rocked the world of science. People were stunned that Bohr, using nothing more than equations and thought, had known exactly where to find element 72. He never even set foot in a lab. It seemed like magic. It also seemed like a threat to chemistry. You see, Bohr was a physicist, not a chemist. And his quantum mechanics had seemingly outfoxed chemistry. In fact, some scientists and philosophers declared that, in finding element 72 like that, Bohr had suddenly made chemistry obsolete. They said that the future belonged to physics, and that chemistry would soon be nothing but a quaint branch of physics. Now, obviously that did not happen. Chemistry is thriving even a century later. But at the time, this seemed like a real threat. As a result, some chemists resented physics. Physics was invading their territory. They were especially mistrustful of people whose work straddled chemistry and physics. People like George Hevesi.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In 1924, George Hevesi was the frontrunner for a Nobel Prize in Chemistry for discovering element 72. But the race quickly got ugly for this part chemist, part physicist. Remember that a French chemist named Georges Urbain already claimed that he had found element 72 earlier, mixed in with a sample of rare earth elements. Therefore, Urbain said that he, not Hevesi, deserved the Nobel Prize. Urbain claimed priority. Now, Urbain's claims were controversial, partly because he found such microscopic amounts, so not everyone believed him. Unfortunately, in the early 1920s, Europe was still deeply divided after World War I. As a result, this priority dispute took on nationalistic overtones of France versus Germany. The French science community, of course, backed the Frenchman, Urbain. Meanwhile, the Francophiles condemned Niels Bohr and George Hevesi as German, even though they were actually Danish and Hungarian. But close enough. One French newspaper even sniffed that the whole controversy, quote, stinks of Huns, as if Attila the Hun himself had put on goggles and been working in the lab. And even outside of France, many chemists mistrusted Hevesi for doing work that straddled chemistry and physics. He didn't really seem like one of them. He was allied with those cocky physicists. Chemists did not have his back. And that lack of backing, along with the political bickering, prevented the Nobel Committee from giving Hevesi the prize. Instead, the committee gave the 1924 Nobel Prize in Chemistry to no one. They left the prize blank. Hevesi was denied his honor. Saddened by this loss, Hevesi left Copenhagen to work in Germany. There he began a little side project. It involved determining how quickly the human body recycles an average water molecule. He did so by drinking so-called heavy water. In heavy water, some of the hydrogen atoms have an extra neutron and are therefore a little heavier. Hevesi volunteered to gulp some heavy water, then have his urine weighed each day. He found that the human body recycles an average water molecule every 9 days. Pretty neat stuff. Hevesi's experiment worked well. But in retrospect, drinking heavy water was more like playing with fire. We now know that heavy water can be deadly. In fact, I have put together a bonus episode about the dangers at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. This story is centered on someone often called the greatest scientist to never win a Nobel Prize. In fact, it was such an injustice that he or she possibly committed suicide over the matter. Can you guess who the scientist is? Find out at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. Also in Germany, Hevesi resumed his work on radioactive tracers, the atoms that he hoped would move throughout the body and allow doctors to see inside veins and organs. And just like he hoped, it worked. He could actually see inside veins and organs. This was a huge breakthrough. And throughout the 1930s, the few scientists who understood the value of this work kept nominating him for a Nobel Prize over and over. But he kept losing out, partly for political reasons, partly because people resented work that straddled chemistry and physics. And because he kept losing the prize, Hevesi grew a little despondent. Nevertheless, with his Jewish ancestry, Hevesi soon faced much worse problems than the lack of a Nobel Prize. Remember, he had left Copenhagen to work in Germany, which in the 1930s was overrun with Nazis. So Hevesi left Germany and returned to Copenhagen to reunite with Niels Bohr. And Hevesi was still in Copenhagen in August 1940, when Nazi stormtroopers overran Denmark. Before long, they were knocking on the front door of Bohr's institute. Now, for various reasons, Denmark enjoyed more protection from the Nazis than other countries did. Niels Bohr was also an international celebrity, so however scared Hevesi was, his life was not in immediate danger in 1940. However, other scientists' lives were in danger. You see, in the late 1930s, two German scientists had sent their gold Nobel Prize medals to Niels Bohr in Denmark for safekeeping. They did so for a simple reason. One was Jewish, and the other was a Jewish sympathizer and defender, and they knew the Nazis would likely seize their medals if the medals remained in Germany, so they sent them to Bohr in Copenhagen. However, Adolf Hitler had made exporting gold a capital crime in Germany, so the discovery of the medals in Denmark could lead to multiple executions. Bohr and Hevesi had to hide them. But where? At first, Hevesi suggested burying the medals in the Institute's backyard. But Bohr thought that that seemed a little obvious. I mean, you have a nice plush lawn, and then there's two circles of dirt sitting there. Even idiot Nazis would know something was hidden there. So Hevesi came up with a far more elegant solution, one that drew on his chemistry skills. As he recalled, while the invading forces marched in the streets of Copenhagen, I was busy dissolving the metals in acid. Specifically, he used aqua regia. It's a caustic mix of nitric and hydrochloric acids. It's one of the few solutions that can dissolve gold. When the Nazis ransacked Bohr's institute, they scoured the building for loot or evidence of wrongdoing, throwing open drawers and demanding to know what stood behind every locked door. But, ignorant of chemistry, they left the beaker of orange aqua regia untouched. Now, Hevesi was forced to flee Copenhagen in 1943. But when he returned to his battered laboratory after VE Day, he found the innocuous beaker sitting undisturbed on a shelf. He precipitated out the gold, and the Swedish Academy recast the medals for the scientists who had sent them to Bohr. Hevesi's only complaint about the whole ordeal was that he missed a day of lab work while fleeing Copenhagen. But even if Hevesi didn't complain, the whole ordeal must have been emotional for him. There was the threat of Nazi occupation, obviously. But even beyond that, there was his personal pain over the Nobel Prize. It must have been bittersweet for him to hold those two Nobel medals, after having missed the prize so many times himself. And as he was dropping them into acid, he must have wondered if he'd ever come so close to a Nobel Prize again. In fact, dissolving the metals must have seemed like a fitting metaphor for his own dreams. But I am happy to report that the story does not end there. Because in 1944, at long last, Hevesy finally won a Nobel Prize of his own. He won it for his work on radioactive tracers, and deservedly so. That work spawned a whole new branch of medicine. If you've ever had a doctor give you or a loved one some radioactive tracers to look at your lungs or heart or kidneys, you can thank George Hevesy. He revolutionized how doctors work across the world, and it all grew out of the dispute with his landlady over the radioactive meat. That stunt eventually paid off with one of the most well-deserved Nobel Prizes in history. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.